Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift. For an interesting circuit stage in Napoli, the eighth stage of the Giro d'Italia on the Saturday. Not a GC day. Tomorrow we'll get into that. It's a blockhouse. This was 154Ks, pretty short, a rolly up and down circuit, the likes of which you'll see at, I don't know, like a Memorial Pantani or Giro dell'Apennino. That might be a bit hillier. It's the type of races Binium cut his teeth on at Delco. Trofeo Laguaglia is a little bit harder, but he likes these sort of races. So does MVDP, who won at Castelfidardo in Tirreno, like this. They were the two favourites for the stage. We thought it was too hard for the sprinters. That was correct. There's 1.8k, 6.8% climb, the Procida, which they do. And then the last climb on the circuit is about 3.5k, 4.7%, then a descent into Napoli. But before we get into the action, which literally kicked off out of neutral, a word on our show partners, Zwift, the cycling app that makes training fun. Whether you're just trying to get a bit stronger on the bike for your weekend rides, or you're preparing for a grand tour like MVDP or Cavendish, there's something on Zwift to help you get fitter and have more fun on the bike. I even did my first AM Zwift today. Did a meetup with a few friends, which was actually really good to kick my day off. Zwift has real world and fantasy locations to ride in, hundreds of workouts on demand. And if you want to try it out, you can go down below in the link in the description to Zwift.com for a free 7-day trial. All right, Benji, MVDP, out the gate with the gun. Attacks. Why? Is it YOLO?
Oh, I wouldn't call it a YOLO attack. I think that we discussed yesterday that there's two ways that a rider like Van der Poel and Girmay could be taking on the stage. It's either controlling the peloton and the breakaway with their team from the peloton onwards and trying to make it a sprint between those riders after the hills. And the other option is going into the breakaway, which would make it harder to control all the attacks that come from that breakaway if it's a larger breakaway. And we saw that Van der Poel was making that attack move near the start as one of the first riders. And yeah, knowing that he does that, he's definitely choosing the second path. And then it all comes down to how many people will join him. Now, I don't agree with the aspect of some people said this is a YOLO attack, typical Van der Poel. Oh, he's going so early and so far. Now, this is just Van der Poel trying to go in the breakaway, right?
Well, yeah, like his team isn't that strong. So you're looking down the barrel of chasing for 140 kilometers because the break is going to form a strong one with the likes of Fellini and co, all the Pro Conti teams, Lotto with De Gent. We'll talk about the full composition in a second. It's going to form. So you either get in it or you'll be chasing. So UAE put Ulisse in the move that was going after MVDP. Binium went in so that Intermarché didn't have to chase all day. And then the more big guys get in, the less teams that are going to chase behind. And if you miss, you're extra fucked. And so that's exactly what happened. We had a huge break go. They would eventually catch MVDP. He was just trying to make sure he got in the eventual break that formed. The big team that missed it, one of the mans who was, I think, top five favorites of the day, we didn't know yesterday whether he'd go break or not, Magnus Cort, missed it. So EF chased for a bit. Once they gave up, done. Break formed. Vendrame quite quick with a teammate, Carmichael. MVDP Fellini, who's quick in these races, won Memorial Marco Pantani in 2020, I think. Tejada, Pools, Suterlin for Bahrain. Gaburo, Guillaume Martin, the closest on GC, 4 minutes back. We'll talk about him in a second. Ravanelli, Zardini, Maestri, Rivi, Binium, De Gent, Monique, Van Hoeke, so three Belgian Lotto riders, Arkas, Schmidt, who won the Montalcino stage last year in his Neo Pro year for Quebec, Schielmoser, and Ulisse. Guillaume Martin there, Benji. Bit annoying for Trek. Like, I think that made their day much harder than they wanted it.
Yes, certainly. It's a rider that is relatively close in GC and therefore can threaten the pink jersey of Juanpe López. And it feels like Trek is very willing to fight for that pink jersey of Juanpe López because they put their team at the front of the peloton despite Skel Moser being in the breakaway. And they try to keep that gap on roughly 2-ish, 2.5-ish minutes between the peloton and the breakaway to make sure Guillaume Martin doesn't become a danger for that Maglia Rosa. And in all honesty, I was like, are they going to keep this up this entire stage? The only team working, Trek-Segafredo, but I was surprised to see that other teams started joining, like a Bahrain, Bora, and Bex. Like, were you surprised that those teams came in and helped Trek? Or what reasoning did you see for them to pace?
I mean, when they started doing it, I was like, you guys better not be worried about Guillaume Martin, are you? Because if you are, if Yates and Landa and Hindley or Kelderman have told them to pace because of Guillaume Martin, just get in the car. Because the guy lost 9 minutes after the first rest day in the Vuelta, mountaintop finishes. He lost 4 minutes on Picon Blanco, 4 minutes on Velafique. He lost 4 minutes on Etna. Like, he gets the time back in breaks. And if you don't, like, we have Blockhouse tomorrow. Like, come on. If I was Patrick Gamper or whatever, Fabora or Novak, whoever it was pacing, they even dropped Sudlin out of the break, Bahrain. I'm like, are you kidding me? Now, maybe it wasn't that. Maybe they were just trying to stay safe at the front on this circuit, which, like, it had a few turns and stuff, but it wasn't, like, it was decent road surface. So I don't know. I would be interested. That's where I would like a reporter on the ground, if we had one, which we don't have yet, to ask the DS, like, why were you pacing and keeping it tight? Because the thing is, it's one thing to be at the front. It's another thing to keep it at 2 minutes. Made no sense. Bit embarrassing, in my opinion. We didn't see Ineos. Castroviejo crashed yesterday. Hurt his hip. That's maybe why they just shut down the stage, I guess. And he was kind of at the back today. And they did the right thing. They just sat in the wheels and tried to recover as much as possible before the prop GC day tomorrow. So nothing happened, Benji, for a while. Break set, status quo, all looking good. But if you're MVDP, like, what stage is this most analogous to? It's got to be stage 7 last year at the Tour, right?
Exactly. It's the kind of stage where he's now in a breakaway that is significantly large. The only difference is that Wout van Aert is now Binyam Girmay. Bit of a difference. And those two favorites now have to control any attack that comes in that group because those two riders have no teammates in that group. There's plenty of teams in there, like a lot with multiple riders that will try and get away in some shape or form from that group. And we saw last year in that stage 7 of the Tour that Van der Poel and Van Aert basically got outplayed by the competition that they were with. And I think Van der Poel was like, I need to try and get ahead of this. And with about 45k to go on one of these climbs, he decided to wing it, to absolutely smash it up one of these climbs. And it was the kind of attack that Hill was like riding on the left side of the road. He swings to the right side of the road and immediately has a gap. And I was like, okay, if this gap continues, we might see solo Van der Poel for a few for an hour and a half maybe. But it wasn't the case because it looked like Mauro Schmidt was one of the stronger riders in the group there. Binyam Girmay also tried to respond. But again, Schmidt was the one that was closing it down first. And it looked like Schmidt closing it down caused Van der Poel to kind of have less confidence in that group getting away. So the next rider returned, the next rider returned, and eventually we came back with a solid group. And that's where the danger starts happening. That's where stuff starts happening where riders can try and get away. But I did start noticing already at that point that Binyam was completely focused on trying to make sure Van der Poel spends a lot of energy today, right?
He didn't leave Van der Poel's wheel the whole day. Schmid was quite active. I think Schmid was the strongest almost, or second strongest at least, on the climbs. Incredible rider. You forget how young these guys are. And another one of the crop of Quebeca NTT guys who maybe were not in the best situation. O'Connor, Maeder, Schmid picked up, and I think the team's got to be very happy with them. But yeah, it was... At that stage, I get it. Like, there was no one up the road. Like, why make the race if you're Binyam? I get that. No need to do anything and just follow MVDP. But the problem was when MVDP was caught, what he was trying to avoid, that situation happened. Gaburo for Bardiani counted. They made a pledge that they're going to actually try and win stages, not just get into meme exposure breaks. He went in a real move. Then Arkas goes for Movistar. again, these two guys, it's beneficial being on the lower rung of the hierarchy of the group because MVP and Binium and Schmidt are like, eh, okay, I'm not going to close down them. Then, now here's where they made a mistake. They let two Lotto riders go, De Gendt and Van Hook, up the road in a two-man team time trial across to that move, and that was the big problem because multiple teammates above in the group ahead, it means you're not just going to get 10 seconds given back to you with finessing in the finale. Someone will give a lead out. So it's a really dangerous situation. And before we get into that finale, mention our supporting sponsor, GCN Plus, where you can watch every kilometer live and on demand of the Giro d'Italia. Tomorrow's stage up Blockhouse. We haven't had too much GC action yet. I think by design from RCS, tomorrow's stage will change that. Up Blockhouse, it's like, I think a bit harder than Alpe d'Huez. It's a serious climb. Quintana won on 2017, and GCN Plus is the best place to watch that with live rights worldwide, excluding New Zealand. All LRCP listeners from the US, UK, Australia, Canada, Germany can get 25% off an annual GCN Plus subscription by heading to gcn.eu/LRCP in the description down below. That stage tomorrow is one to tune into. What did you think, Benji? MVDP, I think he's literally, he said in an interview, I don't race dumb anymore. I realized I have a career window. I need to maximize results. I think he raced this as well as he could. Like, he can't just go on the front Wout style and start chasing after Lotto, who are doing a two-up team time trial with 30Ks to go. It would reduce all his chances to win.
I agree, and I would also say that he was not the factor in that chasing group that made it a worse chase. I think that Binion was the biggest factor there that was skipping turns actively. I think when you look at that group, obviously Vanderpool is going to be the one that's going to be looked at the most, but also Binion, like, I don't think the peloton underrates Binion as much as they did in the past, and I think at this point they're also looking at him to pace more in a chase group like that. Like Guillaume Martin, he's not going to be like, okay, I'll do most of the work here, but he ended up doing more work than Binyam Girmay, for example. And I think that Van der Poel wrote it quite cleverly. I think there's a few points in this race where he was like also skipping a turn, which also didn't help the chase, but he wasn't doing that the most of that group. So I'd say he wrote this rather cleverly. And when it comes to the front group, I think that Lotto took up most of the responsibility in that group, which was honestly supposed to be the case because they're there with two riders compared to the other two riders that are still in that group at that point in the race. And I think that from that point on, it was curious. Like, the factor of that front group is Thomas De Gendt is in there, but he's the kind of rider that, regardless of whether he's the strongest in that front group, he's going to keep pacing. So it was very difficult to pinpoint whether he was pacing so much because he was riding for Van Hooke, or pacing so much because he was simply feeling like he was the strongest in that group and could keep that group going. I thought that De Gendt was leader of the two at that point in the race. Did you think that Van Hooke would try something?
I did. I thought they'd try 1-2 on the last climb. The problem was the gap got smaller, not because of Binny or MVDP. I think largely because Guillaume Martin was like, I need to keep this GC lead that I've just built out. It's gone to 4 minutes to the group. So he was getting close to I think he was 3.5 minutes. So he was getting close to virtual Malia Rosa. And so he was like just pulling, pulling, pulling. Of course, he knows he can't win the stage against these big boys. Poles was pulling as well, but he sucks on the descents on this circuit. But yeah, it's tough because De Gendt is the strongest probably in the finish. But if Van Hooke gets lent onto pull, they won't stay away because he was barely able to pull. Kaburo was helping, Arkas a big engine, but yeah, De Gendt, unbelievable level, just trucking. And there's two things in the chase group, and this is why getting ahead with two teammates from Lotto was a masterstroke, and De Gendt is the master. And I did say that Cam is the best mountain bike rider in the world, but I don't know, maybe De Gendt heard that. The chase behind had group two dynamics, but rarely do you see, and I think this is the mistake of Intermarché or Binny, they underrated his own sprint. In a flat sprint, Binny is as fast or probably faster than MVDP. And like at worst case, in the wheel of MVDP, probably beats him if MVDP gives him a lead out. I think, and I'm more bullish on his flat sprint. Stage one's different. And I think that impacted the odds a lot. People are like, oh, well, MVDP won an uphill 5K, 4% climb sprint, different to what we have in this finish. And you rarely see, it's like Sagan sitting on the group. It's like it's the opposite. And I think he cost himself here. And again, I don't think riders should go to the front and just pull and blow themselves up. It's one thing to not do that. It's another thing, and then you can soft pull, but it's another thing to just do a soft pull, then skip two turns, then let wheels go. That's just actively sabotaging the chase, and that's ruining your own chances. I think sometimes riders get too smart, and some never learn, like Valverde Benchi. They think, if I finesse, I'm gaining an advantage. But you're not. If there's a group up the road, you're reducing your own chances.
I agree with that aspect, but I also want to be the advocate of the devil and look at it from the Antomarché perspective. I think they actively told him in multiple races this year that he should try and play it clever and try and lean on others before he's using his own energy. And I think he's still in that phase where he needs to realize how strong his own limits are and therefore figure out if he should be leaning on the others in this situation or not. And I think that's something that will improve over the years with experience and so forth, where he can trust himself more than the advice that he got from the team initially.
And again, I don't think he was struggling that much because he attacked on the second last major climb and that let the gap go back out. And he closed down MVDP's last ditch Amstel Gold attack. They get to the final climb. Lotto couldn't attack because it was so tight, the gap. So they're going to the finish with this group of four. Gaburo, who's come like seventh in Eschborn, but no one really knows who he is. Arcas, who's like a ruler for Movistar. De Gent and Van Hoeke. Van Hoeke's done. Van Hoeke's going to be doing the lead out in this flat finish. MVDP attacks on the descent. Bini closes him. He does give him a pull in the last 2Ks, but then stops pulling. And so it gets down to just 5 to 7 seconds. We think it's going to be Amstel Gold 2019, but with two riders catching, but the difference, he was a lead out. It's not Simon Clark. Who is it? Fuglsang Benji and Alaphilippe in Amstel. They were finessing the two guys up the road. We've got a lead out here from Van Hoeke. He gives the lead out. Bini and MVDP look at each other when they realize they can't catch with 500 to go. And De Gent dusts Gaburo off the wheel. Like really dominant sprint from De Gent, and he wins this stage ahead of the Bardiani rider, which is still a good result, actually. Second, Arcas third, Van Hoeke fourth. Bini destroys MVDP in the sprint, and Schmidt got back to them and came sixth. So I think a really exciting finish. The last 30Ks are definitely worth watching. Yeah, I think great work from Lotto. I really don't see what MVDP could have done differently. He made sure he was in the break of the day. He didn't overcommit to chasing some moves. He tried to thin out the group, but not too much. And then he tried to work collaboratively with a group, taking a bit more of the burden, but not too much. And if people don't want to work with him, then you lose. You have to be prepared to lose in order to win. And sometimes that's the difference between him and Wout. And it is what it is. But yeah, great win for Lotto and De Gent Benji. I think... like, were you surprised they got in the break with three?
I was not surprised that they would try to go in the break, but with three was probably not what I was expecting initially. It's good that they did so because it brought them the situation that they had towards the end with two riders in that final group. But I think this victory is also great for De Gent because we know that he's in a contract year. He's in a team like Lotto Soudal, which is likely to be relegated. That team might want to save some money and not pay Thomas De Gent the salary like that for next year. So I think this victory is very good for his opportunities when it comes to contracts for the coming season, if he still wants to continue as a rider, that is.
Other action, and the peloton, by the way, Trek El Patron Juanpe Lopez, he got the soldiers of Trek pulling again to make sure they didn't finish too far back. The peloton finished at about 3 minutes 33. Simone Consoni made sure he took a couple of seconds back from Guillaume Martin by sprinting for, let me check, 16th, so that was a high IQ play from him. But Guillaume Martin goes from 28th to 4th. So he's doing, this is his playbook. It's really smart what Guillaume Martin does. It says they want the points, and this is not, he's not good enough to get a top 8 or 7 on GC in a fair fight, so to speak. So he goes in the breaks, and it's just genius what he does. And it's not easy to get into these breaks, so I respect his strategy. He moves up to 4th. Kemna tried to attack JP Lopez. Juanpe said no. He closed him down. He was on the wheel when he knew he was going to do it. And yeah, not too much GC action. But for Guillaume Martin, speaking of, you know, I said he suits this sort of stage. Tomorrow is not what he'll be looking forward to. 192 kilometers from Isernia to Blockhaus. It's a nasty stage. It starts with 3Ks 5%, then 9Ks 6%, then 7Ks 6%, where a break will form. I don't know how big the fight will be. Then rolling terrain before the Passo Lanciano, 11Ks 7%, but that's preceded by actually a bit of a climb, and then descent, and then straight into a shallower climb before Blockhaus, 14Ks 8.5% gradient. It's where Quintana won in 2017. It's long. What do you think happens, Benji? Got to be a big GC fight. Come on.
I hope so. After the days we've had, I really hope that we see a GC battle. The first actual test for the GC riders against each other. We will see the big ones fighting against each other. I think Carapaz versus Almeida versus Yates and so forth. Landa, if you consider that, Bilbao and so forth. I think I see Carapaz winning the stage, and it's probably just because Blockhaus sounds like a big climb and Carapaz sounds like a Colombian. Well, he's not a Colombian, but you know what I mean. Southern American rider that's good with those like harsher climbs, pretty much a rougher climb in this Giro d'Italia. So I think I'm going with Richard Carapaz winning this, although that I do feel like Simon Yates could be the one either surprising or doing bad. I don't know why. It's like, one or the other. It's not a, he can't do middle. He it's not okay for him to do that.
Yeah, I think Simon Yates, what is it, 40 minutes plus? There's an article on lanchonrouge.com.au I'll put in the description of this episode that Nychaka did with all the climbs of the Giro d'Italia, of which Blockhaus is one, analyzing previous climbing times, how long they are, expected times, what's peculiar required, etc. It's actually quite helpful just to even know how long the climbs are. Because then you can go back and look at, okay, so Yates was incredibly good on Alpe d'Himera last year, but that was shorter. That was 9Ks, 9%, but a reasonably hard stage beforehand. He was very, very good on Sega de Alla, but Almeida dropped him there. That was preceded by a similar climb to Lanciano, Passo San Valentino, and then straight up 11.5Ks, 9.6%. I mean, Almeida, Benji, he should be really good on this. Like, Boitoli was good. I think Almeida wins this stage.
Ooh, I kind of like it because he's likely going to end up, like, dropping from the GC riders with about 2-ish kilometers to go, and then he's going to come back to the rider that is ahead. In the last 1.5 kilometers, he's going to drop again, and then at 1K, he's going to resurrect himself and pass everybody to the line if he wins.
The problem is he'll be relying on others. Like, I don't know, what lead out can the others give him? If you're Bike Exchange, do they even, like, I haven't really looked at it because there's not been much GC action. Let's look at Bike Exchange team here. Craddock, can't really do much. Housen's all right, but he lost a lot on Etna. Sobrero theoretically should climb well, but doesn't. Callum Scottson, Yul Jensen, Hepburn, Hamilton. Can they really launch this? Not convinced, although Simon Yates should be good on it. Bardet, again, don't think he likes this sort of finish too much. Carthy, Kelderman, Hindley, I don't know. Hindley and Kelderman, I mean, you remember Biancavallo, like, they could really. Bora looking, they got Buchmann in a domestique role, Kemner, Zvihoff, Hindley, Aliotti. I think Bora got the strongest mountain team, except Tranik's gone for Bahrain. I don't know. Landa. I think some team's got to try. Someone's got to try something. We can't have passivity tomorrow.
Yeah, certainly. I think there's going to be action nonetheless. Even if a team doesn't really take it on completely, eventually it will end up being Ineos then if nobody else does it. And they're going to try and pace at least a bit until someone attacks their train. So I do expect something to happen. I don't think this finish will be a passive one. It's a bit too hard for that Blockhaus.
Yeah, hopefully. Because, yeah, it'd be good to go into the first rest day with some big GC mountain action. Maybe a break wins, but I'm not convinced, to be honest. I think there's a lot of people who are a bit tight on GC at the moment who would be able to win this stage who won't be allowed in a break. But that was Giro Stage 8. Tomorrow, the last stage before the second rest day on Monday. I want to talk about a transfer rumor now, which I don't think is too much of a rumor, which is Richard Carapaz rumored to be going back to Movistar in 2023. His contract is up with Ineos this year. He's the airman here at the Giro d'Italia. First of all, I want to look at this from two. Well, for some context, by the way. Carapaz left Movistar under a cloud because they thought he would re-up with them, and then Quadro, who's his agent, Giuseppe Quadro, pulled a fast one, at least that's what Yun Zue said, and went to Ineos, got a better offer, and then he was gone, and they were blindsided by it. And so the relationship ended, at least temporarily, where no Quadro riders were then being signed by Movistar. Now, Quadro holds the keys to many of the top South Americans and South and Spanish riders, like Freyla. And so he was feeding them to Ineos, Bernal, Luis Leon Sanchez, he went to Bahrain, Quintana went to Arkea, Kwiatkowski, Ineos, the Anauer brothers, Freyla. He mainly goes Ineos, Bahrain, and Astana. And then the Movistar tap was changed. What changed, though, and I don't know this for sure, is Gorka Izaguirre. He went to Movistar, I think. Was it this year? You need to check. Yes, he went. He was signed at Movistar this year. And Ivan Sosa. And I think... And Aaron... Is he rep him as well?
Yep.
Okay. Well, there's the writing on the wall. And I think, and you never know for sure, it's very common in American sports, the benefits of signing up with these agents, if you're Sosa, if you have two absolutely horrific years at Ineos, which he did compared to his expectations and salary expectations, that super agent can go to Movistar and say, hey, you want Carapaz 2023? So you got to look after my boy Sosa, Gorka Izaguirre, and Aaron Barru. And then when I saw those three were signed there, the relationship's mended, Carapaz going there. Why does it work, though? Should Ineos let him go? Do Movistar need Carapaz? Because I think they do.
I think Movistar doesn't need Carapaz. They've got Maslev. Valverde has to be replaced in the coming years. They already lost Landa in some shape or form. Quintana back in the days, but that was ages ago. So they're all down to Mas, really, when it comes to GC in 2023, if this continues, unless you start counting Sosa, which he's not proving at all at the moment. So I see Maz as the only GC rider if Carapaz does not join this team. So they need to try and figure out what they can get for that team in the future. And with Valverde's money coming free and so forth, they can afford a rider like Carapaz, I think. I think Valverde is on a pretty large sum of money at Movistar, most likely, after his performances. And therefore, Carapaz could replace that Valverde role, not necessarily the same kind of races, but a GC rider extra. And I think when it comes to leadership, like, I personally think that Carapaz is better than Mas, but there's also the danger that Mas is going to be TDF leader. I think most likely Giro leader will be Carapaz, Mas will lead Vuelta, and they will both be at the Tour de France if this transfer happens. Do you consider that the same?
Yeah, I think that's the way to split it, because Carapaz, he won't get Tour de France leadership this year. At Ineos, I mean, we've said it many times, the majority of the time they've sent him to races with poor support, like his support at the Vuelta. I know it was COVID year, so it's difficult, but he wins that Vuelta ahead of Roglic with just competent support. He got ripped out of the Giro preparation because Geraint Thomas was overweight after lockdown and sent to the Tour de France team. So I don't even know if his opportunities and support will be worse at Movistar. Obviously, TT and equipment and general level professionalism is worse than Ineos, one would think. But Spanish-speaking team, I know there's a big Spanish contingent at Ineos as well. But yeah, that's the thing. I think Mas, they want TDF. I think he might split Giro Vuelta. I don't know. And share Vuelta with Mas. It is a recipe for disaster. Like, if you were Carapaz's brother or trusted advisor, wouldn't you be like, mate, remember how this sometimes goes at Movistar? Like, Mas is the golden protected child.
Yeah, but I think if while Mas is the golden protected child, I think if he actually performs, they'll come to a point where he will also be considered leader. And I think if he goes to Movistar, he's going to be co-leader if they send him to the Tour de France. And I think he has that leverage at this point. And especially if he would win this Giro, that would rise that reputation even more in that image. Therefore, he would be able to get even more on the table in negotiations as well. But I also want to add next to that, there's the agent aspect of it. There's also the public perception aspect and the rivalry aspect we've had over the years that I think is a bit overblown. The Movistar chasing Carapaz meme was fun, but I think it's overrated. Let's get ourselves back to, for example, the Vuelta 2020, the one of those last mountain stages where they end up having Roglic in the group of a Movistar rider. Those two Movistar riders end up chasing behind the attack of Carapaz in the final mountain stage and therefore kind of saving Roglic's Grand Tour there and winning his Vuelta. But also, if you look at the standings that day, I'd argue it's relatively logically that team decides to chase there, that Movistar decides to chase there, because Dan Martin is ahead of them in GC. It's like less than a minute, I think, at the end of the stage. So if Dan Martin collapses there on that climb because he is dropped behind and they continue at that pacing, then they have an option of moving up a spot in GC. I see that as a logical thing to do, that pacing. A lot of people saw that as Movistar taking revenge on Carapaz, and I'm not in that group.
Yeah, and so in stage 7 of Tour de France last year, Carapaz attacked with Van Baarle's satellite rider up the road. Movistar called back their satellite riders. Very conservative and negative racing, but it was logical again. They were defending Mas from a GC podium candidate, which was a shame for the excitement, but it was logical. I think it makes absolute sense for Movistar. They should, if I'm them, I bury the hatchet and go for this. The question is, can Ineos afford to let him go? They've got Bernal coming back. We have no idea what will happen with him. I don't think you can't predict it one way or the other. I don't think you can rely on him coming back to his previous level. Dani Martinez looks excellent. He's on the books. Well, he's also out of contract. If I had to choose between Martinez and Carapaz, given the age of Martinez, given his general ability, fourth at Liège, fifth at Flèche, third at Paris-Nice, good all year round, won Basque Country, I'm going with Martinez, 26 years old, over Carapaz, even though, and he might be cheaper because Carapaz has won Grand Tours. He's won an Olympic gold. So, yeah. I'd go with Martinez out of the two. You got Rodriguez coming through and Talat and all the young guys. I think Ineos can afford to let him go, Benji.
Oh, I'm not as bullish on your boy Martinez there for GC winning capabilities. I've never seen and don't see Martinez as a rider that can win a Grand Tour at the moment, nor in the coming years. He might surprise me.
Mate, but if he was at this Giro, he would clean it up.
I think Carapaz is a better rider, straight up. And he's a better fighter mentality. He's a better descender. I think there's a weakness in that descending with Martinez that is currently like so easy to exploit for competition that I don't trust this man at all as a Grand Tour leader. And I think I would keep Carapaz at the age of 28, which is also not old, by the way, over Martinez at the age of 26, despite him being more expensive, like you said. Because I would just get rid of Adam Yates instead.
I think he's gone. I think that makes no sense for them to keep him unless they're convinced, unless he, I don't know, podiums the Tour or something. I don't know. I'm bullish on Martinez. I also value the fact that the guy could have won Liège. He's good all year round. I think that's important too. Although the guy's getting this big money, it's really four Grand Tours as well. And they've got Rodriguez coming through, which is another Movistar rumor. Apparently, they're interested in Rodriguez. I said, that's like, I'm interested in having a Ferrari or a Porsche 911. I can't have one right now, but I'd love one. I think Ineos have to keep him. And of course, like, he's Spanish and 21, and he's the best. I mean, I'm sure Movistar are interested in Ayuso as well. I think Ineos have to keep him, Benji. Like, they brought him through. They supported him at uni. He's now performing. He won a stage at Basque, third GC at Valenciana. He looks legit. Like, and he's not up for renewal, by the way. He's out till 2023 at Ineos. I think Ineos have to pay for Rodriguez. I know they paid Pidcock, but I think they have to keep him.
I agree, and I'm going to continue on my Martinez conversation, where I think that Rodriguez is more likely to win a Grand Tour in his career than Martinez is. And I think Carlos Rodriguez, I'm really bullish on his future. I think he's one of those riders that has gradually grown into the current form that he is and still has potential to rise up a bit more. He's got a solid time trial combined that with really decent climbing. I think this rider is one that they 100% should try and keep. And he's one of those youngsters in the team that will certainly perform in the future. So I agree. And I don't see this transfer to Movistar happening. I don't see what Movistar can offer them.
Why would you do it if you were his agent?
I don't know. If they put $5 million on the table, I'd be like, well, perhaps.
True. I'm trying to see. His agent is also a Quadro. So he's going to have a bidding war between Movistar and Ineos. This is why I got to get my agent's license, by the way, which is in the most annoying time slot. It's during the Dauphiné. It's in person. It's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I got to go. It's not even in Geneva. It's at the World Cycling Center. So that's going to be incredibly – like, there's one exam a year, and they put it during the most prestigious one-week race of the year, and you have to go to a place which has no airport. It's extremely annoying.
Most prestigious one-week race of the year, Dauphiné. Get out of here.
What is?
Was a Belgium tour, mate.
Yeah, maybe. Bingo Bongo Tour, whatever it's called. Yeah, so that's, anyway, agent stuff, rider signings, all interesting, a lot of rumors, but I think the Carapaz has won. There might be some truth to it. That was reported originally by Giro Scognamiglio, the Italian guy who often appears on the cycling podcast, and I just butchered his name, so I apologize for that, but he put it on Twitter originally. Thanks, as always, for listening to the show. If you want to check out Blockhouse tomorrow, if you want to get a GCN Plus subscription before that stage, would be the time to do it. Thanks, as always, to Zwift, our presenting sponsor, for supporting LRCP throughout the year, and we'll see you hopefully with a big GC recap after the stage tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.